Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Jennifer Kopasz-Rose.
And this is the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for those who do the needle thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, wait, that didn't come out right, did it?
What?
Needle and thread, the needle and thread thing. Not, you know, that, there you go. That didn't come out right. So.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Oh, well, someone would, so I'll clear it up right now.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Someone would think of it, so we'll just.
My goodness. It could be tattoo.
It could, yes. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
There you go.
That's art, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Sure.
Okay, Stitch Hour tonight, Jennifer and me.
All right. Beth. Yep.
So we'll just be doing what we do. Join us.
Yes.
Have a little giveaway. We'll just talk about stuff. Yep.
Yeah.
We will. Thanks to everyone who has sent had a bunch of guest suggestions for Sunday shows. Thanks to everyone who sent them. I've contacted just about all of them, and I got a good list from somebody here just a couple days ago. And so as a result, got some interesting guests coming up. So,
nice.
Yeah. So thanks to everyone who sent ideas. Really appreciate it. I needed a fresh vein of ideas, and some people
right.
have provided. So really appreciate that. One of them that came from the thing is Sunday's guest, Sarah Dennis, and Sarah is Royal School everything. And teaches and designs and is in her studios in Lancaster Castle in England. And
wow,
like a full-blown usable castle, not one of those ruins sitting on top of a hill.
Well, but
they're remodeling. And she's amazing. It was pretty cool talking to her. So
that's awesome.
That's Sunday. Yeah. Yep. So, and if you want to have some fun, look up Lancaster Castle on the old internet. It's an interesting place. Former prison, has quite a history. Some of it pretty sick, pretty morbid, but, it's worth looking up. It's a lot of fun. So Sarah cool. Dennis and all of her talents on Sunday, that was fun to record that. So join us for that. And then we're working on, and we'll be working on, tonight on the Mystery in Saint-Tropez project. You got, mm-hmm. Now you got the center part done?
Just the very, very first step of those diagonal stitches.
Okay.
The very first thing. I haven't done anything else.
Okay. Well,
so
one step ahead of me then. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll tell my little saga, but, now you're kind of making up the threads and colors as you go along. So,
yeah, I'll just kind of, and I may not even stick with the do it a dark, do it. I don't know. I'm just going to see what I have and put it in.
Now, did you do an over dye for that center square?
Yeah, I used a DMC, floss, and I used 3 strands.
Uh-huh.
Because obviously one wasn't enough.
Right, right.
So I did 3 strands and laid it, and it's a DMC, just a DMC floss, regular. But it's variegated.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So.
And then you're going to build off of that.
Yeah, that'll be, yeah. And then it has lots of colors, so I can pick lots of colors.
Yeah.
I picked one that had lots of colors so that I could have the most options from my stash, you know?
And everything from your stash. You're not going to buy one skein of thread.
Yeah, the goal is to not have to buy anything.
Okay. All right.
That is the goal.
Okay, well, we'll keep tabs, yeah.
Yeah, yep. we'll see how that works, but, you know.
Before we recorded, we were talking about house remodeling and how many trips you have to make to Home Depot. We'll see how many trips you have to make to the needlework store.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Too many.
Yep. So, all right. Well, so we'll see that tonight.
Yeah.
See how you're doing. And then, now, I started out it was a couple Wednesdays ago, on the Congress Cloth Linen. And mm-hmm. for needlepoint stuff, I just had to baby it too much. So, and then it turned out Cindy was going to send me a piece of Congress cloth, regular ivory Congress cloth. And so after the show 2 Wednesdays ago, I went to find my large piece of white, because I was going to lay the threads that I got from Kathy Ray and Needle in a Haystack, who's sponsoring this little project. And I was going to see how they would work on white.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm looking around in a drawer where I have rolls of linen and other things. I had a whole big roll, like probably a yard of ivory Congress cloth. Didn't even remember I had it.
Oh.
Yeah, so out that came, cut it up, taped it, and got it mounted. So, yeah, that was a real break. And then
it's
I had
amazing.
To go...
Yeah. It's amazing what you find.
I know.
When you go looking through your stuff, and you're like, oh, look at that. I totally forgot about that.
I was moving it out of the way. Because I'm looking for white, you know. I'm moving out. Wait a minute. This is Congress cloth here in my hand. What? Where'd I get this?
Yep. And, it's one of those times when you went to the store and bought a yard just to make sure you had it.
Yep. And so then I laid it out on the table. I thought, oh, this thing will be all chopped up. You know, I won't be able to get a 12 by 12 piece out of it to save my butt. No, it's virtually unused yard. It's got to be close to a yard of Congress.
Nice.
It's like, oh, boy, I win.
Perfect.
Yep. So, so now I'm, and then of course I had to go away last week. So,
right
now I'm, ready to start stitching the center section. So we'll see how it goes.
Awesome.
So, and somebody posted, in the Gay Ann Rogers Stitch Along group on Facebook, a lot of people are posting. Someone posted, just the other day that they had finished the whole center section and now they were going to figure out what to do in the four quadrants. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just did that one section and then my brain had to go towards the bathroom and then the stitching that I didn't want to have to think.
Yeah, the bathroom remodeling, not that you just simply had to go to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, the bathroom remodeling that I'm doing.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
And so I have stitched this week, but it's mostly on just one of those country cottage needlework, the September cottage.
Oh, okay.
So, and I'm getting close to done. I just have to do the word September and then the top little branch across the top with little stuff. And then I'm done with that one.
All right. That's September.
So yeah.
And you have all the previous months done?
Yes.
Look at you.
But not fully. You only have through February fully finished.
Okay.
Because remember I showed how I had the March sitting here for like months.
Right.
That need.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So then I'll have September and I want to get those done. I want them finished. So I'm trying to like, I'm looking at what I have and what's lingering. And I'm like, these things need to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And out of my little pile of ongoing whips, you know?
Yep, they do.
So even though I'm like, tempted to work on other stuff or I'm like, no, just get it done. It's easy stitching. It's not difficult.
Yep.
Just sit down and get it done.
Just mindless. Yep. Go for it. Yep.
Tiny bit of counting. Just get in a couple basic areas and then you just go from there. Yep. Good to go.
Well, the ones you've shown, that's a nice design series. Yeah.
It's really cute. I like it.
Well, I'm gonna work on. I was making good progress on the lady, whatever.
Lady Mary.
Lady Mary, yeah. So I want to keep that going too.
Mm-hmm.
Two Gay Ann Rogers at the same time. Yeah.
Ooh.
So we'll see. We'll see. First, I need the time. So we'll work on that. Yep. So and then also there's two videos, that I will have a page on the WeTalkFiber.com for the videos for the Mystery in Saint-Tropez, but you can find them on the YouTube channel. There's one where Beth and I are opening our threads from Kathy Ray, and then the 2 Wednesdays ago was we took the stitch hour, the Wednesday stitch hour, so that's in the live segment section, and I showed how to mount canvas on stretcher bars. So
yeah,
if you haven't done that, that's
And I did remount mine after watching you and asking the questions and talking about it. Remember how I didn't mount mine really quite good enough? I took it off and redid it. I was like, okay, you need to redo it.
Is it better?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is better.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Oh, sad note, Gary Kaufman, who makes or made the Adjusta frames.
Yeah.
Stretcher bars that we all, so many people were using, and then he had to stop because of health reasons. I learned the other day that he died in July.
Oh.
So, yeah. So his health reasons when he quit were obviously quite serious because that was quickly.
So, yeah. That's sad to hear.
Great guy. Sorry to hear that too. Yeah, it's so now I'm stitching on Gay and Rogers pieces on Adjusta frames and his name's all over it, you know. And it's sad. Great guy.
Yep.
So yeah, it's too bad.
It's sad.
Yeah. So anyway, we're moving along on that. Post in on Instagram, post on Gay and Rogers thing so people can see. In the YouTube thing, or the Facebook,
yep. Right.
Looking forward, there's the software I use for the live shows. There's a new version that's supposed to be released before the end of September, and that new version is supposed to allow us to deliver the live show to multiple platforms, because right now it's just YouTube, and then if I want to do it to YouTube and Facebook, then I have to buy another software with another annual subscription, blah blah blah.
Right.
This is supposed to eliminate all that. So then, when it happens in the testing, I follow the software development company website quite closely.
Right.
When the testing has gone extremely well. So then when that comes along, we should be able to deliver the Stitch Hours, the live shows, to Facebook and YouTube at the same time, which will be quite cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Do you have – I know you're on Facebook as Fiber Talk, but it's not like a group. It's just you as Fiber Talk. Are you going to make like a Fiber Talk group, or are you just going to put it on as your normal Fiber Talk thingy?
Well, it's a business page that's an extension off my personal page.
Right. Do you have to change that in order to do live videos and stuff like that? Or
no.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so.
Right.
But I hadn't thought about that a lot. A Fiber Talk group page, that would be good.
Yeah, because you know when sometimes when people are doing our stitch-alongs and stuff, there's no group page to post like... Look, right. I'm doing the stitch along, and here I'll put it in the group page.
Hmm. Okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
That would be good. Okay. All right, I'll put that on the list of things to do.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. It's a short list, only about 3 pages long, but.
I'm sure.
No, I'd never thought of that. That would be, nothing wrong with that.
It's like Kim. You know, does it through her Sassy Jacks group.
Right.
That's how she does her lives, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the Sassy Jacks group page.
Right. Yeah, and people post in there. Yeah. Hey, I could do that. I have that ability.
Yeah, and then, you know, she does, I know that she does, she approves posts before they show up. And I think you can choose whether you do that or not. And you can have people answer questions to join the group so you don't get a bunch of weirdos.
Yeah. Yeah, most needlework groups anymore, yeah, there's some approval process and with good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's just about every thing I put on YouTube, there's at least one or two comments that are, you know, to porn sites or whatever. And it's like, come on. So, you know, I zap them out as quickly as I get notification that there's a new comment.
It's just crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, and I always check on YouTube to only allow legitimate comments. But
right.
their filter's no good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so those comments get through every time. And it's like, oh. Yeah, I'll post last Wednesday night. We hadn't even been 15 minutes finished with the show, and there was already one up there. It's like, stop it. Go find something to do.
Huh. You know? It's got to be a computer program.
It's got to be, yeah.
You know, it really has to somehow be a computer program.
Yeah. But they just ruin these things for people who want, you know, it's a way to enjoy a hobby or whatever. And it's these people are always just ruining it. It's so annoying.
It's like,
you want to get them all in a room and just straighten them out.
Yeah. Like I really think it's a computer program somehow.
Yeah. I mean, it was 15 minutes and already.
Yeah, so. They just search out new content and then they just slap their.
Yeah.
It's got to be a computer program that searches out new content and then just slaps its little stuff in there, you know?
And you'd think by now YouTube could find that and block it, but I guess not.
They probably try, but then there's so many people putting up new stuff. I mean, it's just a constant circle, I think.
Yeah, imagine that. To sit at YouTube headquarters, how many videos go up in an hour? It's got to be amazing.
Yep. Anyway.
Yeah, we aren't going to solve that problem. So last week.
Nope.
Last week, Cindy and I were talking about the warp and the weft.
Mm-hmm.
And how to tell. And now several people have written to say that the warp is the vertical and the weft is the horizontal.
Well, and, yeah.
Yeah, we got that. You know.
Yeah.
The real question is, if you don't have the selvage, if you're just handed a piece of ground cloth, how do you tell which is the warp and the weft?
Right.
Because you don't have the selvage on the left to give you an orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So several people told me their little tricks for remembering the warp is vertical and the weft is horizontal. And so that was helpful to a point. But then Pat Lamprey sent this, and it was this got to the core of the problem. So mm-hmm. warp threads are parallel to the selvage. This came up in your discussion. Once the selvage is gone, it's hard to tell warp from weft. There are assorted clues for fabric, such as... warp threads are often stronger and or thicker than weft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, that's interesting. And let me just.
Well, I weave. I have a loom. I weave fabric cloth. And your warp threads have to be really strong because you're moving that loom thingy back and forth across them. And they can fray and they can get loose. And your weft ones, it can be the fancier, more delicate, like if you're doing some sort of art cloth, you can, and using like, I wouldn't ever use my hand spun yarn as a warp because I would use something that's commercially done that's stronger.
Okay.
That matches. And then I would use as the weft, I would use my hand spun because that you just lay it across and pack it down.
Yeah. So it doesn't take any beating.
You're going. Yeah, the warp. You know how the shuttles go back and forth,
right?
And they beat, you know, chunk, and they're moving along those threads, the threads that they're constantly going back and forth on. That's your warp, and it has to be strong to not fray and to not get loose and weak and floppy.
Yeah, okay, because that's a big deal on when you're going to weave to string the loom with the warp threads, right? I mean, that's
and you have to pull it tight.
That's your prep work. There.
Yes. And you have to pull it tight and it takes some muscle.
Yeah.
It's no joke, you know?
No, I watched somebody talk about that and mm-hmm. I didn't fully understand what they were doing, but I got that distinct impression that the setting the loom up and getting the warp threads on was kind of an undertaking. And if you didn't do it right, then things just didn't go well at all.
Yeah, and you have to pull them tight, and it has to be even across, and because as you go, it'll weaken them, loosen them, so mm-hmm. it's got to be tight and even from the beginning.
Yeah, okay, all right. So, okay, so Pat is saying...
And that's why you use stronger threads.
Yeah, So that explains that then. All right. Then warp threads are harder to pull out.
Yeah, probably because they're in there so tight and they're not laid across like the weft.
So like if I took a piece of canvas or linen, if I tried to pull a thread out, I would struggle. If I struggled, it would, or it was a little, even a little harder, then I could pretty much guess that that's the warp.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, because even when you're laying your weft across, you don't want to pull it too tight on the edges because it'll pull your edges of your fabric in. So you have to, it's a balance between pulling it tight enough so it's not too loose, but not pulling it too tight so when you pack it down that it's not pulling your fabric in.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you get the hang of it, but when you're first starting, it's like, whoa, that's tight. And, oh, that's way too loose.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So then that helps me understand this next point, that fabrics give more across the weft than along the warp. Because that warp, those warp threads are so tight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the weft threads are just jammed down. They're not necessarily woven, certainly not as tight. Okay. That helps me understand that.
Cause even machines, you know, they can't pull too tight cause then you'll have warped fabric.
Yeah.
Kind of the wrong word, but, you have fabric that's uneven. So the edges of the weft part, you have to keep it loose, but not too loose. And
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Cause then she referred us to a conversation we had with Nancy Lukoski, Nancy talked about a bunch of ladies doing kneelers from a congregation, and they weren't consistent with the canvas orientation, and then that caused problems blocking. So now it all comes together. Mm-hmm. So when it came to blocking, she isn't able to get flexibility in a consistent direction.
Yes, because they all need to be stitched the same way with the warp and the weft going the same way, because it'll stretch, the weft section will stretch more than the warp section.
Right.
Yes.
So, this is interesting because it helps understand when you're setting up a needlepoint project or any project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it helps understand what's going on with your ground cloth.
Right. Because like in sewing too, like with your fabric, especially sewing clothes, sometimes they say it has to go with the straight of grain, which is the warp. So you're like, in order to figure that out, if you don't have any selvage, you do a little bit of a tug, and the side that stretches more, that's the weft, and the side that's more firm, that's your straight of grain, which is your warp.
And so when you make, say, a skirt, you would want the warp going vertically.
Yeah, depending on how you wanted your skirt to lay and stuff.
Okay.
Certain skirts, you might do it on a bias so it flares and stretches different, or, you know, fabric behaves differently. But like if you're quilting, you know, and you're doing long bits that you don't want to stretch out, like if you're doing long sashings, you'll want to try to do it with the straight of grain, with the warp going the length, so that your sashing doesn't stretch out lengthwise and become longer or shorter.
Okay, I get it.
So I mean, it's useful in all crafties,
right? So it's important. I mean, what I'm getting out of this then is, even for just everyday needleworkers, it's really kind of semi-important to know that.
Yeah. I wonder how it would apply to like cross-stitch and linen.
Well, I wonder too. See, and that is now that we've talked this through, it's making more sense to me.
Because you know how when you put, if you're one of the, sometimes I stitch in hand. And then sometimes I put it in the hoop and I stretch it. I try not to overly stretch it in the hoop because I often wonder if I stretch it so far and then I do my cross stitches, when I release it and relaxes back down, does it make my stitches boobly?
Yeah.
You know?
see, when we do this kind of stuff, then I want to get out cloth and start playing with it and testing it.
I know. But then how do you, like, is it such a small difference that it doesn't really show? Because I've done lots and lots of pieces where I just stitch in hand and they look perfectly fine. And then I have ones that I stitch in the hoop and they look fine too. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Because now, all right, so now I just had handy here a piece of 40 count Newcastle.
Uh-huh.
That has the warp on, or it has the selvage on it. So I know exactly right. How, you know. So, and I can, see, I'm not sure I can tell. It's like they, if you pull on them, it's like it has the same amount of flexibility both ways.
Mm-hmm.
So now I got to play.
No, I'm pulling on one of mine right now, trying to see, because there's no selvage on this one. So I'm like, let's guess.
See, I guess if I pull.
There's very little. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to tell. There's very little difference.
Yeah.
I also washed and ironed, hot washed and hot ironed this fabric already too.
Mm-hmm.
Which, because like whenever I weave a piece of fabric, it's all woven and it's done. It's not actually finished until you wash it and dry it.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it allows the fibers to expand and set in their natural state.
Yeah.
Which is like, remember whenever I first was doing these country cottage needlework things and I got the fabric, my mom bought me all the fabric and stuff, and I thought that the fabric was too weedy, it was too thin.
Yeah.
I didn't like how thin it was, and so I washed it in hot water and ironed it, and it fluffed up the fibers.
Well, that's
and it made it a fuller, less thin linen.
Hmm.
Because I didn't like how it was all tight and it was too holy and it was very primitive looking, I guess.
Yeah.
And I wanted it fuller. I wanted it a fuller fabric.
Hmm.
Because whenever I've woven stuff too, it looks good. It's like, yeah, that's good. But then you wash it and let it dry and it really fills out and it's like, ooh, that's nice.
Yeah. Okay. Cause see, now you got me thinking, there was, I think it's a Hands-On Design Christmas ornaments that were done on a plaid or a gingham linen.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to do those, but it was just such flimsy cloth that I couldn't get good tension. And I just put them in a box and forget about them. But I really liked the ornaments. So now it makes me think that if I take time with that fabric, I wonder now if I would not get a better fabric to stitch with.
Right, if you'd like washed it. And
yeah. I mean, some just has so much drape that, you know, they're never going to be anything firm.
Right. Well, and, you know, if it's a specialty dyed, you have to be careful of if it's the color is going to bleed out, because you just don't know. This is just normal. I mean, it's a cream, it's a color, you know, but it wasn't like specialty dyed with blotches and stuff. It was just a cream color and the color didn't change.
Yeah.
On this, but it was a commercially produced.
Because, you can pretty much wash out your over dyed whatever. Just.
Right. So you do have to be, but over-dyed stuff though has already been water treated to death.
Yeah.
Which means it's fuller. Like that piece of linen that I have that is the cloudy looking.
Oh yeah.
The blue. It's very, it's actually Aida, but it's because it's been dyed and water treated so much. It's nice and full compared to Aida that I get right out of the box. That's 18 count. That's more stiff.
Yeah.
And not as full.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of your overdyed stuff's already been pre-washed like crazy.
Yeah.
So the work's been done for you.
Okay.
Whereas if you buy something, just say they sell Zweigart off the shelf in like Hobby Lobby or something. If you want it to, you know, you can pre-wash it and dry it in hot, and it'll shrink a smidge, just a smidge, like maybe an eighth of an inch. but pre-wash it and hot iron dry it, and then you'll, if you want to full it.
Yeah. See, this is, you know, this whole discussion then is making me think that, well, obviously there's a lot more to ground cloth than you would just think about. You just think, well, I'll just go buy a piece of cloth and stitch on it. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how much, if that's another one of those little things that can help raise your stitching to a higher level. If you have a thorough understanding of ground cloth and how to prep it and use it.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Well, see, now I've been pulling on this one piece that I did already wash and stitch on. And if you, like, I wasn't getting a lot of movement when my fingers were like an inch apart. So I moved them like 3 inches apart. And now I can definitely see which side is the warp and which is the weft. Because one side is pulling over 3 inches versus over 1 inch.
Okay.
So you might also have to, you know, and that's on linen. It's a 28 count linen.
Okay, now, so, all right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean. Because mm-hmm. now I got this 40 count out, and if I pull the warp, yeah, there's more flexibility on the weft side.
Yeah, and now I've stretched out the top of my I'm going to have to spritz this. Cause now I have a wrinkly top part where the weft is that I stretched it. Because I didn't stretch in the stitching. I stretched along the edge.
Yeah.
But now it's a little bit out of whack versus the other side that's not out of whack that I pulled to determine where the warp is.
Okay. All right. So we're learning here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, then there's the question of if you pull your cross stitch fabric really tight, when you loosen it up, does it affect the stitching? Does it make the cross stitches, does it make them bubbly up? You know, like, and do you want that or not? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What if you're a loose stitcher and then you release it and then it makes it even looser? And
right.
if you stitch tight, and you, then it would make it, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I try not to pull my fabric too terribly tight in the hoop.
Yeah. See, I like mine tight, but.
You're also coming from a needlepoint background.
Yeah.
Where, you know, tightness matters more, I think.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think it does. I stitch needlepoint stuff. I stitch tight. I like it tight.
Right.
I like those, especially if you're doing a satin stitch or, you know.
Yeah, and they all say you're supposed to do it tight.
I want them laying flat to the ground, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But with cross stitch, how much does it really matter? I don't know, because I've done it both ways, and I don't notice a difference in my stitching.
Yeah.
Because some projects I even mix. I'll be like, it'll be on the edge and it won't go in the hoop well. So I'll just stitch that part by hand.
Oh, okay.
And you can't tell the difference from the part that's in the hoop versus the part that I did in hand.
Yeah, we would hope not, yeah.
Right, I mean.
Okay. See, there's more to it. There's just more to it than it appears, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pat Lamprey, about needlepoint canvas then. It's much harder to tell with needlepoint canvas. In mono and Penelope canvas, there's not really a way to tell warp from weft other than stretch, but in interlock, the warp threads are actually two threads twisted together around the single weft thread.
Oh, uh-huh.
So that's, okay, so then when Cindy and I were monkeying around and I was pulling threads off of 18-count canvas, that helps explain why we simply, it didn't matter, couldn't tell.
Right.
One from the other.
And I wonder if needlepoint, the way it's made, eliminates some of that warp and weft issue.
Yeah. Eliminates it as a factor. Yeah.
Right. Because it's bigger. I guess it would depend on how the manufacturing is done. If that's something they work on to make it to where it doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. You'd have to talk to a needlepoint canvas manufacturer and discuss these things.
Now, do I get, if I have, see, and that's the other part. Okay, so, like I'm pulling on 18 count canvas right now.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think I could make like a noise or something so people could tell. But I really can't tell. But then when you talk about Nancy Lukoski and she's blocking, you know, that's pulling really hard.
Right.
And that's pulling
and
really hard.
And isn't it wet?
Like, if, yeah, if it's a kneeler, you've got a big piece of canvas. So then, you know, how does that change the game too? I don't know.
Right. And does she wet block it? Because that makes it stretchier.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's
stuff's wet. It makes it stretchier.
Essential is you got to get it wet somehow, steam or mist or something. Yeah. Otherwise, it won't give.
Right.
So.
And when my fabric is wet, my stitching fabric, my in linen or Aida, I don't stretch it when I'm ironing it.
Right.
You know, I just put the iron down and you don't really rub it. You rub it a little bit, but at the beginning it won't really rub because it's wet and it sticks a little.
Yeah.
So you just kind of set it and you move it and set it and steam comes up.
Right.
Because it's steaming it.
Yeah.
But and I put a towel under it.
Yeah, I put a towel on both sides.
Oh, I only do the one underneath. Especially under. If I've already stitched it, then I put the stitching face down on a towel that with the loopy side up.
Okay.
And that's maybe two or three paddings of the towel with the loopy. But sometimes, like if I'm washing linen that I haven't stitched on yet, I'll put it on the towel first to get most of the moisture out, and then I'll put it directly on my ironing board to really make it flat.
Yeah. Now, see, if I'm preparing a piece of linen for, you know, I haven't stitched anything on it, then I will iron right directly on the linen with a towel underneath, and it's wet to start, so I'll iron it dry.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
With steam. I steam, but
I don't steam it because the steam happens on its own. I don't steam.
Oh.
The steam occurs in the ironing.
Yeah.
Because you're just adding moisture in where you're trying to get moisture out.
Yeah. Well, I just keep going, and I'm sure at some point I just quit adding the steam, but by then the wrinkles are gone, so then it's just...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've never had a wrinkle that I couldn't make go away with water and heat.
Yeah.
And they look like you're ironing, like, oh, is it ever going to go away? It does. You just have to keep going.
Yeah, with linen, yeah, I have no trouble with the, you know, the process I use, no trouble getting them so there's not any wrinkles. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This is most interesting. Yeah, yeah.
But I do whenever I have a stitching that I've already stitched the piece and I wash it, I lay it flat face down and I do iron directly on with no towel or anything in between.
Hmm.
With no steam, just high heat.
Yeah.
And it just dries it and it makes everything poof nicely on that back side or the front side.
Well, all right. Oh, and that reminds me, that was so funny, Sunday show, David McCaskill talking about...
Oh, my God. That was hilarious.
Ironing his silk and then ironing...
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Rainbow Gallery's Frosty Rays or whatever it was. It just melts.
Something. Yep. That was a good interview. I mean, that guy, he's funny.
He is hilarious.
Everybody needs to listen to that because it's funny. And he's... The way everything just... worked out for him. It's amazing. He does all these things. It just works. And, you know, yeah, that was a really good show.
He's fun. He is so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. But, and, you know, I did, because, you know, I have that Aida fabric that has the sparkles in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, if I iron this, is that going to melt? So I tested a piece. And I washed it like I do, and then I ironed it with the hot. Didn't affect it at all.
Oh, okay.
Didn't affect the sparkle. It didn't melt it. It didn't dull it. It didn't do anything to it.
But got rid of the wrinkles.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm doing that big pandemic piece on that stuff.
Right.
And I wanted to see, I'm like, you know, I'm going to want to wash this thing after and iron it. Is it going to affect it? Because I'd never used that fabric before.
Yeah.
And it didn't affect it at all.
Well, good thing you tested, though, because you know
what
would have happened the other way. Yeah.
Yeah, because I had to test. I'm like, okay, I need to know.
But can you imagine having a stitched piece with some flare in it?
Oh.
And you go and you stick the iron on that. Oh,
it all melts. Oh, boy.
Just plastic. Blah.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Funny now, not funny at all. At the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah, guess you learn. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
he's a special guy. That was so much fun talking to him.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. Yeah, if you haven't heard it, Sunday Show with David McCaskill. What somebody even wrote, I don't even do needlepoint, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because it doesn't matter if you do needlepoint. Yeah.
Yeah, he was good. And I just love the way that he just kind of happened into it, and he just liked it.
Yep. Yep.
And he had really helpful people, it sounds like, at the first store that he first started at.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, if you paint this, we'll sell it. He's like, money. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Seize the opportunity.
But he works.
But yeah, just, you know, that's so true.
He works hard.
He's an example of encountering people who are helpful and constructive.
Mm-hmm.
And how he's benefited from that. You know, that you make
right.
That's a good point. Yeah. He basically had good people most of his career.
And he was smart enough to like see it. And he didn't just, he really worked to make it happen after the light went off and he saw, then he worked his butt off.
Yep.
You know, he didn't just sit around and let it, like we were talking about those HGTV shows where it's like, look, all of a sudden it's done. And it's like, you didn't see the 500 people working the night before to get it all done. He makes it seem like it all just happened and it was just, oh, easy, but he worked his booty off and he was smart enough to see the opportunities of the helpful people when they came along and to take advantage of that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's just it. Keeps his eyes open and his ears open.
Yeah. And he saw and made opportunities where it's like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. Oh, you know?
Yep. Yeah. It would be fun to get a bunch of designers in a room to talk about designing and how many of them, you know, you see the beautiful finished piece. Let me show you the pile over here in the corner of all the rejects, you know, all the,
mm-hmm.
yeah, just whether it's a pile of digital data or a pile of thread and ground cloth. Yeah. Let me show you all the mistakes that I made, not mistakes, but all the trials, all the attempts that just didn't work out. You know, I mean, well, talking to Gay Ann Rogers, you know, she talks about that all the time. Just she rips it out until mm-hmm. she gets what she wants. You know, it's not magic.
Right.
Yeah. It's hard work. Yeah.
Yep.
All of them. Yep.
So, yeah, that was a really good, very informative, fun, and funny.
He's so funny. He's so funny.
He could totally do stand up and he's so dry, you know?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I could see him doing stand up. You could see a whole thing sitting there with a stand doing needlework and just doing stand up comedy. Just.
Yeah. Well, he even said that whenever he finally got to where he was a dedicated teacher at a shop, that it became with the people, it became more like they'd just come in and stitch and he'd be there to entertain them and make them laugh.
Yeah. Yep.
And you could totally see how that would happen.
Yeah.
He's funny.
He is. Well, but see, that's the thing. You know, I think if you talk to any teacher, teaching, there is a huge element of entertainment
mm-hmm.
to achieve the goal of educating.
Right.
And, you know, I think most teachers would tell you, you know, I mean, I know for me, it was for 9 months of the year, every day I had to be on.
Right.
I had to have energy. I had to, you know, I had to be ready to go. Energy, don't give up, you know, go rah, rah, rah. You know, entertaining, you know, throw in a little of this and a little of that to make it interesting. And you have to do that to, right. you know, and they always talk about teachers get the summers off. Try it mm-hmm. and tell me you don't need 2 months
oh, yeah.
to regain your sanity. Don't talk to me about that. But
yeah, you have to leave your bad day at home, you know.
You do.
Even when I worked in daycare with the little ones, like 1-2-year-olds, they can sense.
Oh, yeah.
They just sense your mood, and you have to go in and you have to be perky and happy. Otherwise, you're going to have unhappy children.
Yep.
They sense it and they feed off it. And if you have a moment of unhappiness, you can just see that the kids will just react. Almost they look at you and then they sense it and then boom, it's on.
Yep.
Yeah.
So true. Yeah. So when you talk about it,
I can see, 2-year-olds and 16-year-olds, probably about the same, right? So
many days, not a lot of difference.
Emotional state, you know? So.
Yep.
I can see how you'd have to be constantly on, leave your problems at home.
Yeah,
otherwise, you're going to have children who are going to act up because they're going to feed off of it.
Yep. Oh, you do. Yeah. Yeah. There's a big element of acting in that. And any of your good teachers, I don't care if they're teaching what level, from pre-K to adults,
mm-hmm.
the good teachers are have some element of entertainment in them.
Right.
And you have to. You just have to. Yeah. So, and he would be a good one. I'd take a class from him in a heartbeat.
For sure.
What a blast. What a blast. Yeah.
That was fun.
He's pretty good. Yep. Okay. So one of the things that I was wondering, I was thinking about you, that's weird in its own right, but I was, and your Saint-Tropez and you're deciding on the colors as you go along, as opposed to pulling a bunch of colors and saying, I'm going to start with this and I'll adjust if I need to, but this looks like the grouping.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have some go-to colors that if you're putting something together, you start with that and see if that works for you? Or are you one of those that it can be anything?
I picked a floss that had lots of colors in it so that I could go anywhere.
Okay.
Because I just don't know.
So your mind is open enough that you can go in any direction. Like for me,
if I try to limit myself, then I have to go out and buy stuff. It makes it more complicated.
Okay.
And then you end up having to go buy stuff because you don't have the exact perfect thing.
Hmm.
I don't know. I started this particular, some things I really do have, well, mostly when I pick colors, most of my stitching, I just follow what they do. I don't change a lot, but like quilting and stuff, if you want to not use the exact fabric, if you want to use whatever, you find your base fabric and then you go from there. And I just work with what's in the fabric I like, no matter what the color is. Which is the same with floss. You pick a variegated floss and then you just go from there and base it all off of that floss and what looks good with it.
Yeah. Yeah, because with quilting, I mean, your fabrics kind of are your variegated floss.
Right. And then other variegateds can go with it or not, but you pay attention to tone, your color tone and what colors go. Sometimes, it doesn't have to exactly match, but it has to go.
Mm-hmm.
The tone has to be the same or the shade or something has to work.
But for you, you don't tend towards reds or blues or yellows. You're pretty open.
I'm pretty open, yeah. This one, it just happens to be pink heavy. Mm-hmm. And I love pink, but I had the fabric, the canvas that was pink. And then I looked in my variegated floss and I saw this one that was pink with all sorts of like blue and purple and yellow. And so I was like, that one will work. Because then I have lots of those other colors hanging out in the stash of other threads and stuff. So
yeah,
I just picked that.
Okay.
Just because, yeah.
Because interesting, because for me, we all know that if if I'm doing something, then I tend toward blues.
Right.
Because I like, I mean, I just like blue.
And you can see it well.
Right. And, you know, I'm sure that's, yeah, that's from way back in childhood, red, green, color blindness.
Right.
Why should I fight with reds and greens and oranges and purples? And well, purple doesn't bother me as much, but why should I fight with those if I can see variations of blues and what goes with them easily and enjoy them? Then, yeah, I'm sure that just comes from a life of dealing with it, you know.
Right.
And, you know, and that's the thing with, I mean, standard male red, green color blindness, and mine is not nearly as serious as most, as many men. But, you know, it was, I didn't even know I had it till high school.
Oh, wow.
You know, that, so all through elementary school until it was my freshman year of high school, I didn't even know I had red, green color blindness, but I always struggled with some of the colors. So one, you know, one of the traumatic things in kindergarten and first grade when you learn your colors, that's an area that still comes to my mind today because it was so traumatic. Because colors, you know, the jumbo 8 crayons were not as easy for me and automatic as they were for everyone else.
Right.
And so you learn how to get along in the world and and not stir that up, you know, because like the reds and greens, I mean, and it's the variations. Like you give me a dead green, Christmas red, I'm good to go.
Okay.
You start moving around, you know, all the greens, all the variations, I start having trouble.
Right.
It's like the other night when I was looking at a Krynek spool, and it looked gold to me. Mm-hmm. And Beth is, you know, sitting there looking through screen through a computer monitor, and she said, "That's green." and I was trying to work out what the color was, and then when she said it's green, then I could look at it as a green, and then I saw it, and now, you know, I see that. And that's the other part is there's a rote memory that goes on. You tell me that's green. Okay, my mind logs that as green.
Right.
Even though in that instance, it really looked kind of a gold color. It was a weird gold, which is why I couldn't label it.
And, okay.
Yeah, it's a whole weird thing. It would be interesting to get some men together and see what the experience is. Because you just learn to adapt to make the thing go away because everybody else sees it as green or orange or whatever, you know. And the other part of that is once we learn that you're red, green, colorblind, then it's freak show time. Well, what color is this? What color is that?
Oh, no.
You know, just shut up and leave me alone, you know.
Right.
It becomes that because people want to see how I see the colors. And like, you know, it's not like I can't see color. I mean, I see color fine and I can tell when it goes together. Like if there's a green and something next to it that doesn't go together, I can tell. But for me to label those and say, well, that's green, that's orange, that's red, that's purple, is not always easy. And so I tend to just avoid it because it's really not worth the hassle.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, yeah, So when it comes to go-to colors, that's, I end up at blue.
Right.
And it's
because you like it, you can do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And the pressure of naming colors goes away, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
No, I just go with whatever's going to work for the project. I kind of, I really like pink, but not everything has to be pink, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I can do whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty. Yep.
It's a nice freedom to have. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. On that fascinating note, we're going to call it right here. So join us tonight, 8:00 Eastern time on the YouTube channel for more of this insightful conversation.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Colors and warps and wefts and stretching. And
yeah, all those things that we did. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Sunday is Sarah Dennis. You don't want to miss that one. We'll see you tonight, 8 o'clock. Thanks for listening.
Yep, thanks. Bye.